Not more than a year ago, I was asked by a member here to officiate the memorial service of her brother. A kind soul who knew more than the world gave him credit for, and a simple ceremony that was lovelier than it was long. We met at the family plot in a historical cemetery and considered out loud the centuries of ancestors all laid to rest in this space. Time immemorial, it seemed, but time marked by the blossoming and letting go and blossoming again of the tree that offered its shadow over the graves. I will always remember that service, in part because of my love for those who grieved, but also because this gravesite plot was not the typical raised bed of moved soil cut just large enough for a coffin, or even an above-ground mausoleum into which one could enter standing tall, but rather what I'd guess to be a 2-foot by 2-foot square cut into the ground. And when looking directly into this square of absent earth, you could see a ladder, so steep it didn't seem angled, as I'm sure it was. There was a pulley rigged so that the beautiful box of ashes was lowered down without someone needing to let go of that ladder as they followed after. And with a lamp and some courage, I discovered that it was about 12 feet below into what I called a crypt, but is an underground vault where the ashes would be placed and we would say our final goodbyes, surrounded by those who came and passed before. I think of the Easter story often. I love the Easter story and all stories that have anything to do with life, death, and life again, but never had I realized until entering that deep space of earth and memory, of dark stillness that held life after life, connective tissue through the ages of this one family, that when picturing it all, the man, teacher, rabbi, son, beloved, and friend laid to rest in his grave, an early death, a life taken by cruelty and sacrifice for politics and religion so entwined. When thinking of his tomb, where the story says he was laid to rest and then somehow the body absent, I have always and only imagined that tomb from the outside. Which really shouldn't be all that surprising, I guess. Not only is it the way the story is told from Mary Magdalene and the other Mary's discovery of the rolled away stone and then his missing body, the story told to us by those who grieve, those who gathered themselves step by step up to the place where they would face their worst fears, their deepest despair, and then back again into the public for hope that what they said was true. Life. Life despite. Life after. Life again. That is the way the story is told. And yet, wasn't there also a story from within that vault? A time of weight and darkness, of burial and ancestry, a time within. In her book, Proverbs of Ashes, the Reverend Rebecca Parker tells a story about a time she was so deep in the tomb that she saw no way out but to take her own life. She ended a pregnancy in hope of saving a marriage and in the end lost both. This is what she writes. Everything I most loved had slipped out of my hands. I felt there was nothing left to hold on to, not my marriage, not my child, not my faith. I spiraled into grief and self-directed anger. One night, I came to the end of my will to live. I just wanted the anguish to stop. It was a cold, clear night. I lived at the top of a hill above a lake, and sometime after midnight, I left my house and started walking down the hill. The water would be cold enough. I could walk into it, then swim, then let go, sink down into the darkness, and go home to God. The thought was comforting. I had no second thoughts. I was set on my course. Yet when she got to the familiar lake, she saw what looked like a long line of oddly shaped sawhorses all along the shore. As she got closer, she saw a bunch of people all bundled up against the cold. The stick shapes weren't sawhorses, she writes. They were telescopes. It was the Seattle Astronomy Club. Before I could make my way through the line, one of them looked up from his eyeglass and, presuming me to be an astronomer, said with enthusiasm, "I've got it focused perfectly on Jupiter. Come take a look." I didn't want to be rude or give away my reason for being there, so I bent down and looked through the telescope. There was Jupiter, banded red and glowing. "Isn't it great?" he said. It was great. Jupiter was beautiful through the telescope. I couldn't kill myself in the presence of these people who had gotten up in the middle of a cold night with their home-built Radio Shack telescopes to look at the planets and the stars. The beauty of the night sky, the dew-wet grass at my feet, and the Seattle Astronomy Club kept me in this world, she says. But it would be wrong to think of this moment as one in which joy triumphed over despair, good came out of bad, or love of life defeated the desire for death. I did not defeat negative feelings of anguish and despair because I saw something more lovely and good. My heart was still breaking with grief, but I became able to feel more. I was able to place that grief within a larger heart, within a wider embrace that could hold sorrow and joy, loss and illumination, death and life. Every year, I tell the story of Jesus's persecution, death, and life after as if Jesus becomes a silent figure at sunset on that final day, and as if his disciples and kin are the only ones whose transformation makes the Easter story one of hope and purpose in the world. I understand and love the story from that place, from the perspective of the grieving, from the desperate hope despite all that I have been told and seen. But this year, I want to know what it means to have entered that tomb, the security of darkness, the insulation from life, and then be resurrected. In recent months, I have watched as so many I love, and at times recognized within my own heart, the entering of deep and isolating places. The world feels swollen and afire with heartache, and we Unitarian Universalists quench our thirsty and scared souls with books and song of a powerful love that is available always and to all. We preach a good news that this love is not just available, but it is for you and I to make possible, to make true. And yet, we must also acknowledge that we fear that our limits, that there are limits to what we can fix. Children dying by chemical warfare, and our distrust in leadership deepening to fear, and scientists marching in order to give truth a fair shot at the table, it has become hard to celebrate the world and its beauty when it is bombarded by suffering and injustice. It has become hard to know and trust that our faith is strong enough, worthy enough, powerful enough to meet the world's despair. And so we enter those tombs, those lovely and protective and quiet spaces that can too quickly become those absent and distanced and numb places. We forget that life can hold the deepest sorrows, the heaviest burdens, the greatest losses, and still there is room enough for good. We have been given narratives of all or nothing, life or death, our abilities and no other interventions. Forget for a moment Jesus walking from the grave or angels speaking like lightning. We miss something essential in the Easter story. We are distracted by the wrong details. Jesus rises again, we see on church signs, or Jesus is risen. But in Matthew, it says Jesus was raised. Our theology of self-willed healing and transformation can only take us so far, and it can leave us alone in the depths of our tombs when we cannot move the rock for light or levity, for transformation or life again on our own. This blessing can wait as long as you can, writes Jan Richardson in The Art of Enduring. Longer. This blessing began eons ago and knows the art of enduring. This blessing has passed through ages and generations, witnessed the turning of centuries, weathered the spiraling of history. This blessing is in no rush. This blessing will plant itself by your door, will keep vigil and chant prayers, will bring a friend for company. This blessing will pack a lunch and a thermos of coffee, will bide its sweet time until it hears the beginning of breath, the stirring of limbs, the stretching, reaching, rising of what had lain dead within you and is ready to return. How are we resurrected? First and always with time. And then when others slowly but purposefully, with courage and respect, enter our tombs to share in our grief and then invite us to see the world in its fullness. When we release from our hearts the idea that we must rise on our own, move from human to God in one cycle of the sun, and allow others to gather us up and make our story larger, more deep, and more true. This Easter morning, I invite each of us to praise the tombs of our souls that have allowed our broken and tired hearts safekeeping, and to know also that the world is larger than our grief, more curious than the pain we witness or inflict, greater than this time alone. So look up from the dark places and find awaiting for you a people who wish to celebrate your life, who grieve your sadness, and who know your power. And in our looking up, looking out, reaching toward the new day, may we prepare for the resurrection. May it be so, and blessed be, and above all, happy Easter.